人の資本です。
Hello again, and welcome to another edition of Aegonite Presents Solo on Sono. I think I finally got that title right. First time in two episodes I've gotten that title right. Yes, I'm still doing these little mini-sodes, bonus episodes, whatever you want to call it, because, well, if you haven't been paying attention to the news, we are still in quarantine, we're still on lockdown, and fuck all else to do with my time. That's the long and short of it. But with the first episode, I was quite happy with how it turned out, the reception of it, and just the opportunity to watch more Sono films. Like, what this series represents is me really just indulging my love of this filmmaker, and why wouldn't I want to do that constantly? I don't think I mentioned it on the first episode, but with this series, I'll be prioritizing the films of his that I haven't seen. It's just my way with any kind of fandom or filmmaker that I like. I always drag my heels when I'm trying to, when I'm like really exploring them. So this, despite me prattling on about Sono for decades now, since I found out about him, or actually not decades, just the decade, because I'm not that old, thankfully, So in all the time that I've known Sono, I've been prattling on about him, recommending him, championing his work. Yet there's still a lot of blind spots. Part of that is that I haven't seen his... there are like a lot of films that I haven't seen of his filmography yet. Some of that has to do with availability, because who knew a... like, who would have guessed that a bunch of shot-on Super 8 shorts aren't exactly available everywhere? Like, they're not... like, there's not a big Blu-ray rollout for this experimental filmmaker. And partly it's because I'm just not a completionist. There's few filmmakers that I can confidently say I've seen all that they have to offer. So Solo on Sono is going to be a special kind of opportunity to not only correct those blind spots, but also just indulge, as I said, in my fandom. So yeah, let's get on with this episode.
Kamugawa Yoshiro, 高校2年。何も取り柄のない彼が突然エスパーに。
僕は人の心を覗くことができる。
何だらっとしとるだ。
浅見さんが何を思っとるかだって知ることができる。
鴨川君、絶対私でオナニーするよな。
最低だな、吉郎。
僕は運命の人と出会うために生まれてきたんだに。
テレパシー、テレキネシス、予知能力、瞬間移動、投資。
みんなエスパーだよ。
So as always, I have a little spiel, a little plot summary that I'll just read out to you. A cosmic phenomenon inadvertently results in several virginal outcasts obtaining psychic powers, often revolving around their perverted proclivities. Kamigawa Yoshiro is one such sex-obsessed loner, whose sudden clairvoyance places him on a team of other virgin psychics to fight evil in his hometown. And when a team of scantily clad villains show up whose evil plot involves making the entire female population so ludicrously horny that society collapses, it's up to the virgin psychics to save the day. This is The Virgin Psychics, or Ega Mina Esper Dayo, from 2015. And I'll start off by saying that Sono has a weird relationship to this property. It's originally a manga by Kiminori Wakasuji, I think that's their name. I think I have that somewhere in my notes. So it's an adaptation of that manga, but this isn't the first time that Sono has adapted this manga with this cast. And that's where things get really weird. I'm just going to guess that for whatever reason, Sono really loves this story, loves this material, loves this manga, because this is the third consecutive adaptation that he's done of it with the same people. It began as a television series in 2013, like a mini series. I don't think lasted that long. Maybe 22 episodes. Let me just double check that. 12. Actually, so half of that, less than half of that. So I'm already on the ball here. So that's how it began. And then after that, he was head writer and head director on all those episodes. And then after that came out, he did a television movie in 2015, like a follow-up television movie that kind of concluded that story. And then this film came out the same year. So in the same year, he has two movies, technically. One hour-long TV film that's somehow connected to the television series that he did 2 years ago. And this one, which has the same star. It still stars Sometani Shota. And has a lot of the same feel. It's still like an absurdist comedy, but just with more money for special effects and so on and so forth. So I think it's still like produced by TV Tokyo, who did like the TV series. So it's hard to understand what his relationship is with this property, whether this was him milking the franchise for all it's worth, or him just really being obsessed with it to the point where he just kept going back to it, trying to improve it. He hasn't touched this series since 2015, thankfully, so I think it's safe to assume that this film that he directed in 2015 is the pinnacle of what he could do with this franchise. It doesn't say that he kept going back to it, because this is a director who it wasn't until the 2010s where he started to really work with adaptations and started really do kind of contract work. Throughout like his entire 90s career, obviously, and his 2000s career for most of it, he was adamant about writing his own scripts and doing original stories. And sometimes they were based on like real events in the newspaper. We'll get to those later. Sometimes they were just like takeoffs of novels that he might have read. But he's always been like frustratingly original. And for him to just leech himself to this one property and again bleed it dry over three films, two films, one television series, and so that's amounting to God knows how many hours of content that he wrung out of this one manga. But he stuck with it, and I don't know really where to begin with the film. So if you've ever heard the term, I wish I looked up how to pronounce it, because this is going to be embarrassing. Hold on. Actually, I'm just going to cut for a second, and I'm going to check how to pronounce it. Okay, and I'm back. Sorry about that. So essentially, this is an ecchi comedy. If you have never heard of the ecchi genre, it's usually associated with anime and manga. It is kind of like softcore and doesn't take it to like tongue-in-cheek sexuality. It doesn't never takes itself seriously, and it's always about offering an audience kind of a lascivious kind of pleasure. So with a lot of ecchi manga, you may have seen one, and if you haven't realized it, because you may have noticed like there's a lot of upskirts for some reason, or like the female cast members are getting in states of undress for literally no reason, and it's really drawn upon and kind of gross. That's ecchi, and it's usually good fun if you're a pervert. Yeah. So The Virgin Psychics is essentially that. It's about, as I said in the plot description, it's about like a team of virginal teenagers who all, like, a cosmic phenomenon happens while all these like teenagers, like this team, are exploring themselves, let's say. They are masturbating. And when that happens, they all gain these sexual psycho powers. It's like, it just like, you know, ESP, clairvoyance, teleportation. But it all has a weirdly, it all revolves around their libido in some way. And that's where all this comedy comes from, is that it's like a science fiction kind of story, but with this added layer of sleaze running throughout it. And for Sono's credit or his discredit, depending on how you want to look at it, he really leans into the sleaze. Like, okay, imagine his whoever described this film, imagine his camera just has a tongue on it, and every scene his camera is licking his female cast members. And that sounds horrible, because it is. But at the same time, it puts you in a weird place because, one, it is kind of really gross, it is perverted, and it's just so needlessly excessive at times. Like, this is a really kind of like seeing is believing type film, because you won't believe just how crass it gets, how free-spirited it gets with a lot of its like sexuality and cheekiness. But it's part of the fun of the film that it doesn't take anything seriously, and it's a knowing kind of sleaziness that doesn't make it okay. And I could totally understand people just rolling their eyes at the excessive TNA that Sono is just parading out in this film, and like the really flimsy excuses that he's using to display it all. But with these kind of films, like, the tongue is so firmly placed in the cheek, not the camera tongue, like, you know, the metaphorical tongue here, mixing metaphors here, that you can't take anything seriously. And so it's kind of pointless to wag your finger at this film when it's just so unapologetically silly in how it treats this stuff. So, yeah, this is probably going to be a polarizing film if you haven't seen it before. Imagine like a kind of an American Pie type film. Do you walk into those types of films ready to just like upturn your nose at their just unapologetic horniness? No, you don't, because you know what type of film it is. This is that. It's a little weird that it's coming from Sono. Like, this is something you expect from, what's his face? Iguchi, Noboru Iguchi. Like, this is like that. This is his kind of film. Just an excuse to parade around women in skimpy clothing. And yeah, it's a little hard to decipher exactly where Sono's kind of touch comes in. What he saw in this that made him want to not only do this film, but do that television series and do that TV movie, because they are, they're not as risque as this one. There is no nudity in the film, by the way, but it gets really close. But it just really complicates my perception of this director, that this is the project that he really wanted to commit himself to. And part of the reason why I don't want to say it works, but it's acceptable, like, you are much more forgiving of its content, is because the entire script is built around this, like, sex obsession that, like, the main characters feel. And it's crass, it is blatant, and it is overbearing at times, but at the same time, it is part of this film's DNA. It's not like Sono is stopping a scene to ogle this one female character. All female characters are ogled, and again, not okay, but at the very least, it's not lying to you about what it is. It is fully accepting of what, of like how lowbrow it is, and in some respects, it's refreshing. Okay, let me just break down some of these, like this plot, because this plot is insane. So as I was saying, Shota Somantani, like the main character, like the actor's name, who's that character's name? Yeah, Kamigawa Yoshiro, virginal teenager. Even though like Shota Somantani, the actor, was around like in his late 20s when he filmed this. Shota Somantani has the curse of the child face. He's like in his 30s now and he's still playing teenagers, and he's good at it. Like, he's a really good actor. He's actually one of my favorite actors in the past 10 or so years, because he's a very committed, very committed, full-throated type actor who really just sinks his teeth into every scene. And a lot of that is kind of overacting and just insanity. But it works for him a lot of the times, and he could really do, he's got a great range. But the problem with this is, the plot. Let me just get back to the plot. I'm all over the place here. So he's a virginal teenager who is like the typical Sono protagonist, in that he has one single solitary goal in life, and that's to find his one true love, his soulmate, so to speak, that he met what in the womb, not an incest thing, while he was in the womb at a delivery ward. he connected psychically with another fetus. Are you following along? And they had a conversation and said, one day we will meet again. And he's obsessed his entire, like, 17-year existence trying to find this woman, this girl. And, yeah, like, that's his entire character, is this obsession for this one girl. Like, his masturbation fantasies are him meeting this girl and them having a good time in the park. Just holding hands and running around, and it's like, this is his entire existence. And Sono is usually very approving of these characters. He likes that kind of singular personal drive in his protagonist. So when he develops these psychic powers, all of a sudden he's connected with a bunch of other of these teenage psychics who are pushed into this group, this team, by this psychic institute, Asami and Akiyama, these two kind of like psychic professors who assemble this team. I'm not explaining it well because it's really hard to explain, because the plot, it's a 2-hour and 10-minute movie, and not a lot happens in it other than the constant parade of softcore TNA, which is probably what people were watching it for anyway. There's a version of this film on Pornhub, for example. I just found it when I was Googling, and like, yeah, I'm not surprised by that. So he joins up with this team, and they're all kind of coming of age together and discovering more about their sexualities, while this huge burden is placed on them that they are the quote-unquote town's protectors. Because while this is happening, while they're learning to master their various psychic powers, there's this gang of like scantily clad women who show up and somehow infect the entire population, the entire female population, with like a hormonal disease where they all just get incredibly horny. That's the plot of this movie. Like, that's it. Like, that is the main, that's like the main villain, like the main conflict in the film, is this group of virginal teenagers trying to stop a horniness epidemic that is affecting their town and causing society to collapse. So that's the plot that we're dealing with, and obviously you just can't take that seriously. And it works, I guess. It works to the film's benefit, because all of this rampant, unjustified, and just completely out of place TNA scenes, these really kind of extended, drawn upon like scenes of softcore kind of creepiness, I guess I'd call it, it's all kind of rolled into this premise of weirdness and tongue firmly placed in cheek comedy that I don't say that it's acceptable. I think you're just more accepting of it. Like, you're far less critical of it, because it doesn't take itself seriously. And weird sexuality is rolled into every single aspect of this plot. Like, literally every character is sex-obsessed in some way. Like, everyone is controlled by their libido in this film. Like, this is not a subtle film. And, again, speaks to Sono's strengths, quote-unquote, like, question mark, as a director, is that the man does not have a subtle bone in his body. And it's probably why he was so adaptable to this kind of ecchi manga story, because it just, he saw it for what it is, just an excuse to parade women around in very skimpy outfits, and he ran with it. I mean, Sono at the time was, and is, like a 50-something-year-old man. He's had sexual tangents in all of his films. He's a horny old man. And obviously, this story just spoke to him. And I kind of respect that. I'm kind of creeped out by it. And that like, silver lining between creeped out and respectful of is just where all of Sono's filmography fits into when you think about it. Oh, holy shit. By episode 2, I already cracked the code. Look at that. Series done. Okay, no. So, as I was saying about Shota Samantani, very good actor. If you haven't seen Himizu, go look that up, because he's really good in it. Go see And Your Bird Can Sing, because he has a really subtle role in that. Like I said, he has range. And in this film, he is just chewing the scenery in every situation that he's placed in, because he's a very, as I said, a very obsessive character, and like his whole quest to find his long lost love that he met in the womb. Repeating it all out loud makes it sound so much more worse than it is. But yeah, sorry. It allows him to really sink his teeth into this material, and he goes for it. Like, he is at a 10 at all times. Like, just constantly freaking out at every prospect that this film throws at him. And it works. It works for the material, it works for this actor, because he's really, really good at playing unhinged, at just giving it his all in every scenario. And he's contrasted well with his love interest in the film, his childhood friend, if you've heard that phrase before in any kind of anime like this. But his childhood friend, Miyuki Hirano, who's played by Eliza Ikeda, and she's genuinely incredible in this film. One, because, again, she does have a lot of TNA scenes, and she is the best looking on the cast, so no complaints here. But her role as, like, the only woman member, like, the only member of the opposite sex on the Virgin Psychic team, surrounded by all these horny guys, is, like, it's a really nice contrast, because, like, she's a shy woman who's really kind of, like, discovering her own sexuality in turn, and it's played kind of straight because she's such a talented actress, and she really works with this material despite its really stupid, really silly kind of casing that it's placed in. Like, her story is a, like, if the film was shot from her perspective, it'd be, like, a really kind of earnest sexual awakening for her, and it's nicely contrasted with the rest of this film and with the rest of the characters, who have one kind of sexual trait that defines their entire personality. Everyone's kind of really one-dimensional because they're archetypes, they're from their manga, like, they're not real characters, they're one character trope, and that's about it. But I just wanted to single her out because I think she really handles this material well, and again, extremely game for this, because as much as she's placed on the other side and is, like, the voice of reason throughout this entire film, she is also, like, her first scene is her waking up in, like, a strange hormonal spell, and yeah, Sono does not spare her any of his camera's tongue to recycle that disgusting metaphor I was using. Oh, by the way, if the microphone quality is a bit different in this part of the podcast, it's because the mic I was using just kind of died. I started hearing a lot of troubling feedback in the playback, and I said, like, well, that's not going away no matter what I do, so I had to change mics. So thank God I had a backup. I will say, like, that I mentioned earlier, I kind of, and this is probably just a hangover from the manga, but I kind of like how these characters' sexualities are so tied to their entire personality. It also qualifies their superpowers, their like, psychic powers. Like, Shota and, no, I keep calling him Shota, even though it's not his character name, Yoshiro and Miyuki, both their characters develop, like, ESP, like, they read other people's minds, and all they hear, they're just bombarded with people's, like, libido screaming in their brains. Obviously, for Miyuki, it's just a bunch of older men saying how much they want to fuck her, which is just great, like, that's wonderful, that's probably accurate for a lot of women. Hey, look at that, Sono is making commentary, good for him. Well, Yoshiro just hears a bunch of other men's, like, desperate sexual pleas, like... But with the other characters, for example, like, Terumitsu, who is played by Makita Sports, the comedian, his power is telekinesis, but he can only move quote-unquote sexual objects. So he's either moving dirty mags around, or, like, you know, porn mags, or he's moving Tengu, I forget what the name is, like, male masturbation products. I don't know what's up with this film, but there's a lot of free advertising, probably not free advertising, for, like, sexual aids in this film, and this whole character, like, this character has an entire back room full of them, just like personal masturbators. And it's just, first of all, it's shameless that this product placement is so blatant and in your face and unapologetic. But at the same time, again, just such a weak excuse to, again, it's a kind of, it's the mantra of this whole film, like a weak excuse to indulge. It's a weak excuse to indulge in women stripping by saying, like, oh, there's this epidemic of horniness that's affecting this town. Oh, they have no choice. Oh, no. And it's a weak excuse to have this much product placement, to indulge in product placement by saying, like, oh, well, he can only move sexual objects. So, I don't know, just fill his gaff with a bunch of those things. It's a bit upsetting, like, that this is, it's like, the advertisement is so blatant and this film's so commercial in that way. But, you know, this is evidence of Sono's 2010 career, wherein he's more accepting to contract roles and commercial stuff. I mean, this is the decade that he had his, like, first real commercial hit in Shinjuku Swan, coming soon to this podcast. And he was much more, and, like, this is also his most prolific period, even among his independent days, when all he had was a Super 8 camera and just did whatever he wanted. So, yeah, I don't know really what else to say to this film, say about this film. It's, again, it's really stupid, it's silly, it's so hard to take seriously, but it's kind of fun in a sleazy way. Like, it's, like, what do you get out of this film is kind of hard to say, because obviously so many people who went to go see this film showed up for one reason, and Sono gave them that one reason. Seriously, watch the trailer to this film. There is no fooling you. Like, he was honest from the get-go that this is a trash film for trash people, and you shouldn't be ashamed of that, you trash person. Enjoy it. And I wouldn't say I necessarily enjoyed it, but I found it fascinating. Like, just, again, how unapologetic it is with a lot of its sexuality, how different it is from this filmmaker, that he put everything on hold for a second and just indulged his creepy old man libido. Like, this is essentially Sono doing a Russ Meyer film. Maybe Russ Meyer, even Russ Meyer is a bit too classy for that. Maybe late Russ Meyer, when he did that film Pervert from, like, 2008. Like, just the bare minimum of narrative and story to get to the, just to put women on display and ogle them. Like a Herschel Gordon Lewis, but, you know, before the gore. There's no gore in this film. Yeah, this is probably going to be a lighter episode, mostly because I don't know what else to say about this. It's kind of a blip in his entire career, a significant blip, because it lasted two whole years and hours upon hours of content based around this one manga. That's probably the most fascinating thing about the film and its legacy, is that Sono devoted himself to this series, this idea, for so long. And the film he made right after this was Anti-Porno, which is, like, the Nikatsu Roman Porno reboot project, where Nikatsu was celebrating their, you know, 100-year anniversary by rebooting that the Roman Porno series. Again, I'll get into this on that episode when I do it. But, yeah, so this is clearly, like, a paycheck film, I would want to say, between, like, more personal projects. Like, before this was The Whispering Star in 2015, right after it was Anti-Porno. But at the same time, it's for a throwaway paycheck that he just wanted to make money. He spent a lot of time with this story, with these characters, with these actors, because he reused them in, like, all of the versions that he made. Maybe one day I will watch the TV movie or the TV series. I'm sure they're widely available on streaming sites and so on and so forth in Japan. But, yeah, it's just so strange that I'm stuck with this really kind of gross, lascivious comedy, and it's so unlike the rest of his films. Like, when Sono has previously done, like, erotic content, it's been really distressing. It's been really challenging, and it's been really kind of either gross in a Irogiru Nonsensu kind of way, or a Grand Guignol kind of way. like with a Strange Circus or even Anti-Porno, which he made it right after this, or what's that one, Cold Fish and Guilty of Romance. Like, those are quote unquote erotic stories, but there's substance to them. There's like really intense themes to them. They have so much more to offer than eye candy. And Virgin Psychics is just him, I guess, indulging and having fun. And I don't want to begrudge him that. Of course, this film could have been a lot better. The effects are atrocious. Like, a lot of the psychic effects and stuff is, like, just awful. And it reuses a bunch of locations. And it seemed like, because it was produced by TV Tokyo, they were just recycling a lot of the... It's just a TV series with a bit of a bigger budget. And, like, while watching this film, you can tell how it's paced. That, like, this is one episode, this is another episode. Like, he didn't adapt it that well from either the manga chapter structure or the anime... The television drama series chapter. Episode structure, rather. So, it's not a great adaptation. Again, I haven't seen them... haven't read the manga or seen the TV series, so they might be better. But this is really segmented and... leveled off, and it's really kind of noticeable. So it feels like a cash-in, but at the same time, it's just a bit of gross, dirty fun, and it's not really for me, but there are worse that you could be watching. Like, I mentioned Noboru Gucci, and some of his stuff is downright unwatchable, because there's, like, no craft to it. And it's just a man indulging in his fetishes, and I applaud him. I applaud him for that. Like, good for you. You convince producers to help you get off by making a movie, but... yeah, this one is a bit of a dud in that respect. It pales in comparison to the rest of his 2010s, and as I go through those films through this podcast, so you'll see, like, this is one of the low points of this decade, but again, one somewhat dud. I don't hate the movie. It's just a weird oddball. Probably going to be a great cult film if it ever gets, like, proper distribution. Like, a proper DVD release in the West and stuff. I think Gaga handled its international distribution. It played it, like, at Fantastic Fest and stuff like that, so... it has a reputation. And like I said, if you don't mind going on Pornhub, you can see the whole thing without subtitles, I think. But hey, I mean, that speaks to it right there, right? Like, no one wants to hear the plot. No one wants to hear the dialogue. It's like, just show us what we want. Gross. So, yeah, take that with a grain of salt. This isn't, unlike the previous episode, Balloon Club afterwards, which had a lot of substance, a lot of themes to work through, and it's a really interesting kind of film that pays off dividends once you spend the time with it and really kind of try and pick it apart. This, like, I don't want to say there's no depth to it, but it's not hiding anything. It knows what it is, and it's counting on you to know what it is. So get off your high horse and just perv out, I guess. And on that note, this will be the conclusion of the second episode of Solo on Sono on the Virgin Psychics, Ega All Esper Dio. Let me just double check if that's the right... yes, that's the right title. I think I mentioned in the first episode that the next episode is going to be chosen by lottery. Like, I have all the film titles put into a random number generator, and it's going to pick one. So actually, let's just do that live right now. And again, this is prioritizing films that I haven't seen before. So, like the next episode is probably not going to be Suicide Club. It's not going to be Himizu. It's not going to be Cold Fish. It's going to be something that I have either haven't seen before or have only seen once, and probably not good quality because just the nature of dealing with Sono. So let me just load this up here. Probably riveting content, I know. All right, here's all the titles that I put into the generator, and let me just... here, I'll really accentuate the click so you know that I'm doing it. It's going to be Hazard from 2005, which is the film that he shot mostly in New York. Well, I'm excited. So make sure, if you like this content, make sure to follow us at Egg and Night Podcast, me at Cinema Creep, Aruba, my absentee co-host, because this is a solo venture, at Aruba Sultana. Keep an eye to the page, because we will probably be doing another proper Egg and Night episode soon. I think it's still going to be on Brothers and Sisters of the Tota Clan, so a little bit of Ozu into your quarantine is always a good recommendation. And yeah, stay inside, wash your hands, and watch some Sona movies. All right, peace out.